I think that knowing yourself is luscious. I think asking for what you want is luscious. I think boundaries are luscious. And my version of lusciousness is not every mother's or woman's, because I would be big on that Marvel movie marathon or something like that. So it's super, super unique and personal, I think, to every person.
Welcome to the Zen-ish Mommy Podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Gershman, and while I may never reach enlightenment, you will find me here cussing and laughing along the way. This podcast is a place for all women to connect, educate themselves, and slow down, because you deserve a moment to pause and press play. Welcome back to the Mom Slow Down Podcast. I'm your host, Jessica Gershman. And today we're going to slow down and talk about the air of women in business. And maybe you have felt like I have, that the vibration of the universe is starting to change, to elevate, more people are awakening. And that pertains to women in business. I've definitely come on here many times and said, I think it's changing. We're not seeing the infighting and the competitiveness and the cattiness and this idea that we have to smash one another down in order to get ahead in a patriarchal society. But just the converse, that we're seeing women uplift other women, that there's this idea that if one succeeds, somehow we're all succeeding, and that it's not infighting, but more supporting one another. And no one can tell that better than my next guest. I want to welcome today Sarah Olin. She is the founder and CEO of Luscious Mother, whose mission is to support women in their pursuit and creation of great lives, however they define them. Professionally trained by world-renowned leaders like Dr. Brené Brown and Mark Hunter, Sarah has over 10,000 hours of facilitation experience, is credentialed by the International Coach Federation, and certified by Accomplishment Coaching. Welcome to the show. Awesome, Sarah, it is so nice to meet you. You were just saying we've got some similarities. I wanted to get all this on tape. Tell me, what are we... How do we connect?
Right. Well, before I got into professional coaching and leadership development, I taught meditation and yoga in New York City for 10 years. I think I did my first yoga training in New York in 05, 06, and then trained teachers and delivered all kinds of meditation and wellness programs to companies in New York. Yeah. Before I transitioned into executive coaching.
Do you still practice?
Oh, I still practice. Yes, yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, for sure.
I'm so grateful that yoga was the catalyst for my change. A lot of people come through different ways, and I've met some incredible coaches and therapists and people that have gotten on to their path of awakening for all kinds of different avenues. I feel very grateful that mine happened to be yoga. You know, yeah. It kind of fell into my life in a time when I was ready for the teacher and to show up and to change and to evolve and awaken. And I had the catalyst of my first daughter being born, which gave me the strength I didn't have before to really evolve and grow and love myself and forgive. And yoga is just such a sacred space, such a beautiful space to be able to do that.
It's really special. It's quite a gift. And I've always been, it's funny because the type of yoga that when I started practicing, it was right after 9/11, and I had just moved back to the East Coast from California. And I found this amazing yoga studio in Southern Rhode Island, really small, beautiful. And they had 20 types of yoga, and I knew nothing about yoga. I just remember living in California and seeing these women walking around with yoga mats and thinking, I'll have what she's having. You know, she looks happy.
She's in shape. She has a good butt in those yoga pants that walked by.
Yeah. And then of course, because it was me, I was the one that fit into my schedule is not the vinyasa.
Hot vinyasa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Kundalini yoga class fit into my schedule.
Oh.
So okay. Kundalini, there's a lot of meditation. There's a lot of spiritual practice and devotion and bhakti and that sort of thing. So that was what I came up in. And then of course got into all different types, but you know, what I was trained in and the thing that I know the most about is Kundalini, but I do practice vinyasa. I think it's great. It's just a different party.
That's so interesting though, that it was your schedule, right? That dictated which path, which sect of yoga that you were able, and then to go into Kundalini. I mean, that's an incredible transforming path, not the California girls in the yoga pants with the, you know,
it's all good.
Yeah. Right. No, it's all good. You had like a little smorgasbord of yoga.
Yeah.
I love it. You got to taste the rainbow.
Yeah, for sure. And it led to coaching and all that great stuff.
Because I learned so much. I didn't know a lot about coaching before I've interviewed some of these incredible women, but we're speaking the same language as like yoga sutras and the Bhagavad Gita. And we're saying the same thing, but with different words, you know, which just is such a beautiful experience of how we all kind of get to a similar location, and that really the underlying thing is we all just want to be happy, right? I mean, we all just want to connect.
Yeah, I think so. And I think all religion and spiritual teaching, all of it eventually gets us where we want to go. So it's all good stuff. And I think that at different times in our life, different things speak to us, and teaching meditation in corporations is a very interesting experience. And you know, now being in this transformative conversation with people and mothers specifically is a really cool, neat thing too.
Yeah. Well, and your motherhood is this uniting force between us all. And whether you are in a stage of life where you have children that are infants or little ones, toddlers running around, or preteens, teenagers, colleges, or kids are grown and moving out of the house, we have this connective in a collective experience that we can all find compassion and empathy because we've been there at some point or we've had similar experiences. It is this beautiful thread that really weaves between us all mothers, and that for you to have devoted, you know, your life's work to helping mothers specifically in the workforce, to give them passion and drive and to have them have like this incredible life. Good. I mean, what an amazing experience.
Yeah, it is amazing. And I was working with a client this morning and he lost a friend and we were talking about grief and death being the most ordinary thing, right? It's just, it's another part of life. And I said, yeah, that's how I talk about becoming a mother. It's the most ordinary, extraordinary thing that you'll ever do. I mean, it happens. Three babies have been born since we started talking, or more.
Oh, yeah. All over the world, all the time.
Right.
And have been for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, thousands of years.
Exactly. So it's getting the awesomeness and also the complete ordinary, and hey, it's Wednesday, the kind of experience of that. But I think that moms are really special in the world and they need a lot of support.
And they're not getting enough, but I think it is changing. But let's dive in. All right. So you founded LUMO, which is Luscious Mother, right? So tell me exactly what that stands for and why you named your incredible company LUMO.
Well, it's funny because it did start as Luscious Mother. So back when I was a baby coach about 9 years ago, I remember working with my very first coach who was fabulous. And she said, and I was training, I said, I wanted all these things, right? I had this opportunity back then to coach at the United Nations. I was building videos, wanted to create a six-figure coaching business. And she said, who would you need to be in order to create all that? And I just thought, and I thought, and I said, Luscious Mother. And it became my moniker. People called me Luscious, and people would start to use the word Luscious in conversations that I was in and adjacent to. And I became known in my community, in my coaching community and beyond, as being the coach for moms who are struggling, moms who are not feeling so luscious. And I started putting on retreats, doing group programs, and I had this beautiful business that was just me. And it was growing and growing, and I couldn't keep up with the demand. And I wasn't just coaching women. I coach men. I joke about my practice. It's from fashion to the NBA and back again. Therapists, lawyers, banks. I mean, it's just, it really runs the gamut because you're just always attracting who needs you and who you need and all that great stuff. So it's been a really dynamic and interesting experience. And I actually have a lot of men right now in my practice, which is just kind of interesting to think about. They need something that I'm bringing, which I think is heart, because I'm a very heart-based leader and coach and trainer. And I think that a lot of men are missing that in the world, yeah. And they don't get it necessarily, especially in corporations. So, and my corporate work, my executive coaching was really thriving. And a few years ago, I said, I want to take this big into the world and I can't do it alone anymore. And I gathered up the smartest, most creative, dynamic group of women that I knew. And I said, hey, I'm doing this thing. Do you want to do it? Everybody said yes. And it led to Lumo. And we've been on a mission since that time to support companies in supporting their maternal and paternal workforce, right? Supporting moms and dads and having a great experience, because more and more dads are feeling the pressure too. And, you know, moms have been on fire for a long time. So we're looking to put the fire out there.
Well, it's interesting that you said, you know, to support the men and give them that heart. And that's kind of who's gravitating towards you and your teachings right now, because we can't neglect that it takes all of us, mm-hmm. right? If we want to change something, everyone's got to participate, be drinking the Kool-Aid to support one another. I mean, we can, as women and mothers, go out and be like, we're going to do it. We're going to support one another, but we still need our men. We still need the other half of the equation coming up and coming to the party and being on the path, on the journey to change and evolve. And their evolution looks totally different because we're all heart. Yeah. All we have is heart, you know, as women. And that's what kind of gets us into trouble, right? We're these constant nurturers and we find ourselves depleted and alone and just tired because we have so much heart and we have so much to give. So I love that you're bringing the men along for the ride, that they're coming to you for this expression of heart, of really being in life's work.
Yeah.
I love it. All right. So going after, so describe to me what you think a luscious mother, because it's a word that we don't hear all the time. It's not an everyday language. What is a luscious mother to you?
Well, to me, it's about authenticity and full self-expression. It's about living a great life, however you define it. And one of my partners, a few years ago for Mother's Day, she said to her husband and her son, what I want for Mother's Day is to lay in bed all day, watch Marvel movies, and for you to rub my feet and bring me food. And they were just flummoxed. They couldn't believe that this is what she wanted. And I think that knowing yourself is luscious. I think asking for what you want is luscious. I think boundaries are luscious. And my version of lusciousness is not every mother's or woman's, because I would be big on that Marvel movie marathon or something like that. So it's super, super unique and personal, I think, to every person, every woman. But I think that that's to know yourself. My sister-in-law, Dana, I think is very luscious. She's really strong. She has strong opinions. She has strong boundaries. I love that about her. It's very luscious to me. So I think it's personal. But I think there are tenets of it, right? Generosity and inclusion. And there are things that we certainly stand for and believe in as a company that are our values, that are based in what we think lusciousness is. Having fun, swagger, humor.
I love some swag. I love. I love some, right. When you said a couple of things like being comfortable in your skin and setting boundaries as luscious. And some of these things that for me, I'm like, God, it took me to get to 40 to start to really, you know, age into some of these luscious qualities. Is it possible that we start to instill these lusciousness qualities, these things into younger women earlier on and give them the space to know themselves early without having to get through the awkward 20s and the exhausting 30s and the, you know, awakening 40s until your 50s and beyond, and you're really starting to feel good? I mean, can we start to do this in our 20s and in our early 30s?
Oh, yeah. Oh, and I think so. I think the younger generations, millennials in particular, I think they're doing a great job. They have boundaries. They have values. They don't care. They're like honey badgers. I love them. You know, I know for a lot of leaders, managers, folks in HR, they have a really hard time because they don't know how to manage, in quotes, millennials. But it's really about they just are unwilling to work the way that I worked or you work, right? There's
just grinding it out with zero self-respect. Yeah.
Work 14, 16, 18 hour days, right? Completely, you know, and this is, I think we're in the midst of a great reckoning with work and the way that people work. It's not working. It's People can't tolerate it. People are leaving. They're willing to make it work on one salary, all kinds of things. I think there's a great change coming and I'm happy for it. I'm here for it.
Well, it's taking back the quality of life. I mean, we as Americans have always lived to work, not work to support our life. We have no life outside of work. And, you know, if anything, we come back to the pandemic and what it did is like, all of a sudden, like we got so much time back. And we had this moment, this snippet in time that I am so forever grateful for, which is just recognizing our value of our time, of our energy, where we put our energy, you know, where we waste our time. You know, that time is very valuable. And I think it really reevaluated people's priorities. Like, wait a minute, this life thing, this is really short.
Yeah.
And it's all of the outside world, all of that chaos. And that's chaos. I mean, and we can get the rug ripped right out from under us at any time. And I think for having a collective human experience of this real awakening, this change, this uncontrollable external factor that we all participated in was hugely life-changing, because all that little control that we thought we had of, oh, if I do this, this will happen. And, you know, my life is okay. And I can control all the, no, we don't have any control. That's all just perceived. Right.
Yeah, that's perhaps the greatest fantasy of all. And that I think was really hard for lots of different individuals, people. And now that the world is opening back up in so many ways, I have clients that are overwhelmed and exhausted because the buffet has opened back up, but they're relating to it as like they've got to take it all versus I'm going to have the lobster, the filet, and I'm leaving the nasty rolls and that kind of thing. I'm just going to have the good stuff. And I have had many, many people say they love the pandemic for that reason of not having anywhere to go, anywhere to be. I mean,
yeah. So what do you think, as we talk about women in the workforce and mothers, what do you think the biggest hurdles that we're facing personally, professionally, as we are in the workforce?
Well, it's funny. At different times, I am present to different things. And the thing that I notice right now is people being bought into the lie that they should be able to do everything themselves. And therefore, they're resistant to support or asking for what they need. And that's one of the greatest gifts that coaching's given me is the understanding that I can't do it all, that I shouldn't do it all, that I don't want to do it all. And I've got to delegate, hire, whatever. And I understand that some of that is privileged to say. And if there's something that we want, there's always a way to make it work. Right? Whether it's getting supported by a friend or a family member. You know, I think that the greatest barrier that we have as women is often our resistance to getting the support that we need and asking for it for fear of seeming weak or needy or whatever disempowered story that we have. But I think it can be ourselves, like where we're just not asking for what we want and need, like somehow we should be able to do it all, or it should be different versus, hey, wait a minute, this doesn't work for me. This isn't how I want to live my life, right? In really asking for what you want and need and being an advocate for yourself, right? As moms, we're such great advocates for our children, but we're not always the best advocates for ourselves, but it's a skill that we need to develop in order to win in the workforce, because no one's advocating for you. sometimes, mm-hmm. right? Like sometimes someone will, but we call it like winning the HR lottery or the manager lottery, because, you know, if you've got a great manager, great, you're going to be supported. They already know what to do. But if you don't, you've got to generate that mm-hmm. and create it and drive it versus waiting for someone to come over and say, like, this is what you get and all that great stuff.
Or you look like you're struggling. Let me help you.
Sure.
So many mothers have left the workforce, you know, COVID, you know, we are still taking on the majority of household responsibilities, even though a lot of homes are now two parents working, two salaries, you know, two incomes to make ends meet. Yet we're still kind of holding the brunt and forced to leave careers, leave paths, make decisions to divert to our other half. How do we start getting women back prepared to into an equal workforce?
Well, that's a great question. I think that, you know, we wrote a whole article about, you know, how you've actually leveled up and how you're more qualified than ever for the workforce as a result of having navigated and managed through the pandemic, right?
I've been the custodian and the chef and the elementary school teacher and
everything, right? You've expanded again, you've leveled up again. And really, I think it's about recognizing and owning your value. And I will say this, because I talk to HR professionals several times a week, they are hurting. And those folks wanting to re-enter the workforce are holding the cards right now, because mm-hmm. people are, they cannot attract talent, they cannot retain talent. And particularly their maternal talent, particularly female talent. So ladies, get excited, because it's looking good for us right now. It really is. I mean, people want to hire women. They want to hire great people, right? So,
and now it's time to ask for what you really need and want and expect from a potential employer, which is paid daycare, sick child leave. I mean, some of these things that end up being hindrances and have been historically because we're unreliable, or you have children or something always happens. I mean, we know as mothers, you got a kid that's always sick. Now they got to stay home and quarantine for 10 to 14 days. What do you do then?
It's unbelievable. It's funny, Jessica, before the pandemic, my husband and I used to, if Mirabelle got sick, our daughter, we would be like, oh my God, what are we going to do? We can't possibly, oh, and it was this like dramatic thing. And then once the pandemic hit, it was like, I mean, we became ninjas of like, because necessity is the mother of all invention. And we reinvented, we recreated. And again, a lot of privilege there. I work for myself. My husband works for himself. So more flexibility than the average. We partnered with another family with two kids, and I did one day, each parent took a day, and then the grandparents did Friday. So we were unbelievably blessed. And I'll tell you, I struggled on my days to teach. And I use that term very loosely, please.
Right.
I do not want to disrespect any teachers. My daughter's teacher is so phenomenal. I would never disrespect by saying I was teaching. I was hurting, and I didn't even do a good job of that. I never want to go back to that. And all teachers deserve raises and diamonds or whatever they like.
When is now the time to ask for that? I mean, what should women entering the workforce be, or re-entering the workforce be asking for? The sun and the moon?
They should be asking for whatever a win-win is in their life, right? Mm-hmm. And for some women, it's going to be a higher comp. For some women, it's going to be more flexibility. I want to work from home. Let's say the new policy is you've got to be in the office 3 days, willing to come in one day or willing to come in 2 days. You want to start with what you need and being really authentic and unapologetic about it. That's also really important, right? Because it's like a dog. People can smell fear, or when there's an apology, oh, I know it's really, that's so hard. It's like, no, this is actually what it takes to live a life. And I think that's one of the great gifts of the pandemic, is that we no longer have to hide and pretend that we don't have families, that we don't have children or spouses or in-laws or dogs or parents, you know, and we can't pretend and hide. And I think it's, I'm a go for the moon kind of person, but I say at the very minimum, make sure you're asking for what you're worth and check it with a savvy friend, because you might not be the most reliable one, right? Because we're not always present to our own value and contribution, right? I would check it with someone that you trust and love to make sure, like, and make sure they're a person that they're going to encourage you versus discourage you, and tell them what you need. Like, we get to train the people around us and how to support us.
Well, it's important because we're always teaching people how to treat us. I mean, I tell my daughters this all the time, is like, you're constantly teaching people what's appropriate and how they can, you know, treat you and what they can say or not say, or what boundaries you're setting or not setting. And are you going to be, you know, a doormat that someone's going to continue to walk over because you don't want to speak up? It doesn't mean you have to be hateful or angry, but you can stand up for yourself and set appropriate boundaries. And I think we as women, I mean, I love that check and balance, because I just had a conversation with a girlfriend and I got asked to do some public speaking. And I was like, well, I think I was going to charge X. And she's like, are you insane? That is terrible. No, you're worth so much more than that.
Nice.
You know, and I was like, oh, okay. You know, I mean, really kind of talked me down. And it is nice to have an outside perspective, someone who loves and cares for you deeply, that can also kind of check you, because we still don't see our value and our worth.
Yeah. Always check it. Always get a second opinion and ask too, like, hey, what's the budget? Here is where I'm at. I'm willing to work or have the conversation. But someone, I'm leading a Dare to Lead currently, and one of the women said last week, it's something from a teacher of hers, that within clear boundaries, there's extraordinary freedom, because when you have the guard, like, you can do anything inside of that, right? It's like, woo, now I have all the freedom. So it's really a great thing to be clear. And Auntie Brené says, clear is kind. And I love that too.
Right. And it takes away, you know, the inference, the assumption, you know, from both sides. Like, we don't have to think we know or have these, you know, unspoken expectations, and the other person as well. And, you know, just being real clear and honest. And is that, as far as coaching, someone comes to you and are those the kind of first steps, as you get them to find their own inner voice and inner confidence and kind of get to know that person?
Yeah, I think it's really, when people come to coaching, it's always because they want something, right? They want something that they currently don't have access to. And it's a conversation, coaching, where am I at right now? Where do I want to be? And what's in the way, both real and imagined? And really, it's about removing that imagined barriers, right, to what they want to create, usually stories about themselves or the world. But I always say my job is just to love people a lot, a lot, a lot, a lot, so much so that they can see their own greatness. Mm-hmm. In the reflection of themselves, that they get to remember who they are, because we forget all the time, right?
Yeah.
I'll be meditating and just like in this beautiful space, and then 5 minutes later, my husband comes in and asks me a question that irritates me, and I'm like, ah!
Oh yeah. All that yoga training goes straight out the window.
Bye. Bye. Right? I mean, that's...
You do the choir. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's right. So my job is to help people remember who they are and what they're committed to, beyond just that when they got fired that time, or when they got overlooked for that promotion, or when they lost that game, or whatever it is. It's how do we have a resilient spirit? How do we remember more often than not what we're committed to, what's possible? And it's challenging.
Yeah. I love it though. It's getting back to the knowing that's already inside, the remembering, you know, of how great we truly are, right? All this outside world stuff. That's just crazy chaos.
Crazy chaos.
Yeah. So with Lumo's mission, what do you want mothers to take away from your work?
Oh, from our work?
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's a personal and professional development is what we do. And what I want them to take away, like, my thing has always been about putting women back into the driver's seat of their own lives, right? Oftentimes as a mom, you feel like you're being dragged by the bumper and you've got a mouth full of gravel. And it's just, and our work is meant to support women in getting back to power. And that's what I want for every woman to understand, that she has choice, that she can create, reinvent herself, her life, her circumstances in her context, the way that she sees the world, the way she experiences the world. She can change that at any time.
Yeah. And do you connect these women together so that they start to develop a community of other like-minded women that are out there on the path, on the journey, trying to accomplish similar things to support one another? Is that important?
Oh yeah. Community is super, super important. And we're introducing elements of that into our work in a larger way. It hasn't always been that way. It's been smaller, right? Group mm-hmm. coaching where you've got four women, or a retreat where you've got 12, 15, 20 women, right? So you're creating community in that way. But with some of these online platforms that we're working with now, mm-hmm. people have more and more access to community, to share resources, to get supported. And I love being live together.
Yeah.
And working in small groups with women is just mind-boggling. Women can fall in love with each other in 10 seconds without any mm-hmm. external shenanigans. By the time we get off our first group coaching call, everyone can be strangers. They all love each other. They're rooting for each other. They care instantly. It's really beautiful.
I love it. It's that thread. I mean, that we're all connected. I mean, we're all connected in the world anyway. And I, you know, believe that, but that thread of motherhood that, you know, further deepens the bond that unites us. And then this collective experience of, you know, being on the path of trying to figure it out. Also the collective suffering unites us to let you know that you're not alone, whatever, you know, feeling unworthy, you know, you didn't ask for what you needed. You know, we're all have been there and we will be there. You're like, nobody's experiencing anything new, right?
No, we can't escape. And I tell my clients that all the time, you're a human being. That's your cross to bear. And that's right. Like no one gets out alive. So like, how can we have the best experience, more joy, and come back quicker when things aren't how we want them? Be less attached to whatever we're feeling or thinking or interpreting.
Well, yeah, it's like coming out of meditation and then being like super irritated by your husband or your kids or whatever, and then being like, what the fuck? You know, but then still come back to your meditation the next day, or, you know, I mean, you got to keep coming back because we are meant to have a human experience, and it's all the highs and lows and ups and downs and everything in between. If we were meant to be monks in a cave, you know, meditating for 23 hours a day, then we would be doing that. And that would be our experience, but we're not. We're here on this planet as mothers, as women, doing the damn thing.
For sure. And it's easy in a cave when you're away from everybody. It's harder when.
Yeah.
When you're out on these streets and people are riding scooters and cutting you off. And it's like, what is happening? What is with all the scooters?
Yeah.
We talk about it through the lens of your bandwidth and how do you increase your bandwidth mm-hmm. to be with people and to be with life.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Well, so you've had some incredible teachers. You said Dr. Brené Brown, you know, as one. Is there a piece of advice, a takeaway that has really stuck with you that you continue to share and spread to other women that you're working with and professionals?
I think figuring out what matters to you and then making sure that that is integrated everywhere in your life. Brené has a great values exercise. You can find it online. It's in Dare to Lead. It's in the training. But my two values, the last time I did the exercise, were fun and being the best. So it guides a lot of choices. It guides the way I operate, the way I show up, and what I practice. So I think knowing what's important to you and making sure you're experiencing that. And if you're not, making sure you're doing something about it.
Well, that's a beautiful check-in, because before you commit to something or take on another exercise or whatever role, and you're like, is this fun? And am I being the best? And if they're not answering both of those questions, it's like, right. No, I'm going to take a pass.
Yeah.
It's real honest.
Yeah. I'm reading Is Essentialism on your radar, Jessica? Have you seen that book?
No.
Oh, it's fabulous. It's really twirling my world and blowing my hair back. And it's helping me get even more laser focused because my first answer to everything is yes. Yes, I'll come and coach your team. Yes, I'll create this new program. Yes, I'll, you know, all the things. And it costs something to always be a yes. And for some people, it's a breakthrough to say yes, but not for me. It's a breakthrough for me to be more discerning and to say no. But this book is really blowing my hair back in the best of ways right now. Essentialism.
Awesome. And I'll put the links in the show notes for sure.
Oh, fantastic.
Check that out. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So here's my last question. I said, if I ever did a documentary, it would be taking a snapshot of dinner time at people's homes all over the world, because I think it's so fascinating. Like, I'd love to be the fly on the wall at your house for dinner, somewhere, you know, across the world for dinner, because I think it says a lot about who we are and what we value. So what does dinner time look like at your house?
Oh my gosh. It looks a couple of different ways. My husband has been teaching a class at night, which has had him out a few nights a week, which has been hard for my daughter and I. It's harshed our mellow a little bit as a family because that's our time to sit and talk. Yeah. But we'll often talk about, we, during the pandemic, we did high, low, buffalo. Our high of the day, our low, and buffalo was what surprised us. And then we did gratitudes. So that's kind of our evening tradition, but I'm not a great cook. My husband's not. So we will be heating up something from somewhere. There's a woman in town that cooks meals and you go and pick them up and it's the best thing in the world.
Yeah,
I'm in love with her. I've never met her. I just only go to her garage to get the meals out of there. But yeah, it's coziness. We want to start to bring the energy down. We're all fawning all over the dog. It's just precious. It's walks and yeah, just being together. And then my daughter trying to negotiate for television shows and
sweets.
Yeah. Potentially eating in front. Mom, could we eat in front of the TV? I'm like, no, that's a once a week special thing. But yeah.
High low buffalo. That's a new one for me. We do pecan pits. I've done rose thorns, but I like that one.
Right. Oh yeah. Rose and thorns. That's sweet too. Yeah. Yeah.
So. Yeah. But I like the high, low buffalo. It's got a good ring to it. I'll have to introduce that to my girls this week and see what they think about it. So
yeah, that's awesome.
Awesome. Sarah, thank you so much for your time. Where can listeners find more information if they want to become a luscious mother?
Oh my goodness. So lumoleadership.com on Instagram, at Lumo Leadership. And we also have lots of free resources on the website, lots of great things happening, including our program for expecting moms. So come on over, reach out, connect. We love to meet new people.
I love it. We'll put all those links in the show notes. Sarah, thank you so much for your time.
Oh my gosh, Jessica, thank you.